जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा वन चारी यमुना तीरा वन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधा गोपीनाथ राधे जय गौरनिताय जय गौरनिताय गौरनिताय जय गौरनिताय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत
इस डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद
अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ की जय श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय श्री गोपाल जी की जय निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्निति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद द्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा So happy to be back again in the Brahmachari Ashram. This morning, somehow or other, we were talking about the Govardhan farm and there's some issue with the water here now. And then the topic turned to environment and it was suggested, please speak something about the project that I had the proposal I had given to all the temple presidents for the Indian temples. So since it happened to be available in my laptop, so I will show that presentation. I consider this a very important part of our preaching, and not just our preaching, but it's very important for our practice of Krishna consciousness as well. Last November, I presented this proposal to the temple presidents. Several of them were very enthused, but it remains to be seen how much it will get translated into ground reality. This project for eco-friendly ISKCON temples and projects, green temples, has been titled Vrindaranyam. As you know, Vrindaranyam is another name for Vrindavan. Vana means forest, and the word Aranyam in Sanskrit also means forest. So in the Bhagavatam, Vrindavan is sometimes also referred to as Vrindavanam. So in order to remind us that being eco-friendly is very closely connected to being Krishna friendly, and we'll see why. So it's a long presentation, it may take an hour, but I'll try to skip through it quickly. I would have liked to have a separate presentation for devotees in general. This was specifically for temple presidents, but nevertheless there'll be many useful things that will come here. in this presentation, I'm getting straight to the point in order to save a little time. Yeah? I've divided this presentation into three parts. The first section is to convince devotees that we need this at all in the first place. Many devotees seem to think, well, isn't preaching our main business, chanting, dancing, feasting, and so on, then why should we be eco-friendly? So this is the first section. The second is the actual proposal. And the third are practical, doable steps that different temples can take. The way Krishna lived in Vrindavan, so this effort, this Vrindaranyam effort is dedicated to Krishna, the greatest environmentalist, who demonstrated through his Vrindavan activities how to live in harmony with nature. This effort is titled Vrindaranyam with an aim to create the spirit of Vrindavan spiritually and ecologically in all ISKCON temples and projects. These are just a few quotes. I actually cut it out from the temple president's conference because of shortage of time. There are numerous such quotes about how Vrindavan was so beautiful and how the environment was so beautifully preserved in Krishna's time. Here is a quote from Shukadev Goswami about Krishna's childhood pastimes, the Brahma Vimohana Leela. Then looking in all directions, Lord Brahma immediately saw Vrindavan before him, filled with trees, which were the means of livelihood for the inhabitants and which were pleasing, equally pleasing in all seasons. The description of Vrindavan forest as given herewith was spoken by Krishna 5,000 years ago, and the same condition prevailed during the time of the Vaishnava Acharyas 300 or 400 years ago. This is from Srila Prabhupada's purport. Kujat kokilaham sasara sagana kirne mayura kule. Vrindavan forest is always filled with the chirping and cooing of birds like cuckoos, ducks and cranes, and it is also full of peacocks. The same sounds and atmosphere still prevail in the area where our Krishna Balaram temple is situated. Everyone who visits this temple is pleased to hear the chirping of the birds as described here. Prabhupada wrote these purports in 1975. And since then, in just 30 or 40 years, there is such a change. And now the only sounds you can hear there are the sounds of cars honking and of the commercial music blaring from the loudspeakers across the street. Those are the sounds you can hear in Vrindavan now. This effort is also dedicated to Srila Prabhupada, who advocated a lifestyle of simple living and high thinking. This way of life is in direct contrast to the consumerism of the present, which is responsible for environmental degradation. So the first section, why should we be eco-friendly? I've given several reasons. Reason number one, we have to follow in Krishna's footsteps. As devotees of Krishna, we need to follow in his footsteps and demonstrate harmonious living at all levels in our temples and projects. Second, simple sattvic lifestyle, the mode of goodness. By making our temples eco-friendly, we will create a simpler, more sattvic way of life, which is essential for Krishna consciousness. Another feature of the devotee is nirahaya, simple living. Niriha means gentle, meek or simple. A devotee should not live very gorgeously, imitating a materialistic person. Plain living and high thinking are recommended for a devotee. He should accept only so much as he needs to keep the material body fit for the execution of devotional service. This is from the purports of Srila Prabhupada. The third reason, divine nature. Nature is divine because it belongs to Krishna. This is again a quote from the science of self-realization. As soon as we speak of nature, the next question should be, whose nature? For instance, I speak of my nature and you speak of your nature. Therefore, as soon as nature is mentioned, the next inquiry should be, whose nature? Nature means energy. And as soon as you speak of energy, you must accept that there is a source of that energy. For example, the source of electric energy is the electric powerhouse. Similarly, in the Vedas it is said that material nature is working under Krishna's direction. The idea being that because it is Krishna's nature, it is sacred, it is divine. Therefore, if we are Krishna conscious, then we must be environmentally conscious. And here is a quote from one of the, I think it's from the Transcendental Diary probably. You know, it's from one of his, from one of the books. Upendra liked to ask Swamiji questions in the morning walks. Swamiji, Upendra asked, now this is from the early days of the movement, before he was known as Prabhupada. What does the spiritual master or pure devotee see as he walks through the park? He sees Krishna, Prabhupada replied. He thinks that these are Krishna's trees and this is Krishna's house. He sees everything is belonging to the Supreme Lord. But if Krishna is everywhere, Upendra pursued, does the pure devotee see Krishna on the wall on the right, and then the wall on the left, or in the corner, or in between every atom? Does he see one form of Krishna merge into another? Where does one form of Krishna begin and take off from the other form? No, it is not like that, Prabhupada said. Do you see my spectacles? Yes, said Upendra. So whose spectacles are they? Prabhupada asked. They are yours. Prabhupada pointed to his shoes. And what is that? Those are your shoes, said Upendra. Yes, Prabhupada said. Similarly, a pure devotee sees Krishna like that. Everything is Krishna's. This is how he sees Krishna everywhere. This is from the Lilamrit, chapter 7, Return to America, 1967. So, nature or environment is divine because it is Krishna's property, and as devotees we try to see Krishna in nature, as Srila Prabhupada has mentioned above. Is it not then incompatible with our Krishna consciousness to be insensitive to nature and contribute to the degradation of the environment? Now, Prabhupada mentions two examples here of the spectacles and the shoes. So let's take off from, extend a little bit this analogy. Now here you see Srila Prabhupada's spectacles on the table, right? As careless handling of Srila Prabhupada's spectacles would amount to disrespecting Srila Prabhupada, so too mistreating nature is disrespecting Krishna. Do you agree with this point? Suppose Prabhupada wasn't sitting where he's sitting now, and only Prabhupada's spectacles were on the table, and a devotee went there, and as he was cleaning, he just brushed the spectacles off the table and the spectacles went flying across the room. And he didn't really care much about the spectacles. Who is he actually disrespecting? The act of disrespect to the spectacles is an act of disrespect to whom? Why? Because they are Prabhupada's spectacles. Now, if there was an employee who came in and he didn't know who Prabhupada was, let's say for argument's sake, and he did that mistake, it's still an offense, isn't it? What then if a devotee comes and does the same thing? It's a more serious offense. Why? Because he has knowledge of the connection of the spectacles to the owner. These spectacles belong to Srila Prabhupada, how much more careful I must be about them. When a non-devotee may destroy the environment, it's still a sin. But when a devotee does the same, it's worse, because a devotee should know better. Because a devotee should see that this is Krishna's energy. This is divine nature. It's Krishna's property. It's meant for his service. It's not meant for my sense gratification. It's not meant to be exploited by me and mistreated by me. So therefore, mistreating nature is to disrespect Krishna. So do you get this train of logic? Such a simple, sublime logic. It's so simple actually. Then why should we see anything around us as anything separate from Krishna? It's Krishna's energy. In the Bhagavad Gita, in so many sections, Krishna is teaching us to see Him through the elements of nature. Rasoham apsukonte prabhasmi shashi surya yo, for example. I am the taste of water, I am the light of the sun and the moon. So Krishna is teaching us to understand His presence through nature. So, as devotees, we should also try to see Krishna not just in the temple, because when we go out also we must see Krishna in every aspect of the creation. The Bhagavata describes that the person who sees Krishna only as the deity and doesn't see Him in the hearts of other living beings is a Kanishtha. So therefore, as our spiritual understanding expands, we have to see Krishna not just as the deity, but we have to understand Him as the presence in everybody's heart. And indeed, we see everything around us as Krishna's creation. The environment, therefore, is Krishna's property, and we have to preserve it and deal with it very respectfully. Number four, the fourth reason. The earth is our mother. Correct? Of the seven kinds of mothers, one is Mother Earth. The Vedic hymn to the earth, the Prithvi Sukta in the Atharva Veda, is unquestionably the oldest and most evocative environmental invocation. In it, the Vedic seers declare earth as Mata Bhumihi Putroham Prithivyah. Earth is my mother and I am the sun. So we are the children of Mother Earth. As mother, the earth nourishes us and supplies us all that we need, just like our biological mother does. Our survival is completely dependent on Mother Earth. Just as a small child in the womb of the mother is completely dependent for its nourishment and its very existence on the mother, similarly, we as children of Mother Earth are completely dependent on her for our survival. Whatever technology we may have, but ultimately they are all transformations of the gifts of nature that have been provided to us by Mother Earth. Here are some quotes from the Atharva Veda. Waters cleanse humanity from the evil of pollution committed by it. Waters are healing and the strengthened one to see great joy. And this one from the Mahabharata is interesting. Even if there is only one tree full of flowers and fruits in a village, that place becomes worthy of worship and respect. So in the Vedic culture, everything about nature was respected greatly. Should we not therefore take care of Mother Earth as we would take care of our own mother? Krishna is our father, so how can we serve Him and yet neglect our mother? Do you agree with this logic?
Yes.
So if you see these four points that I've given, it's so simple. It doesn't need to be Einstein to understand this logic. It's so simple, but yet somehow it doesn't seem to be so easily visible to us. And here's a famous verse. In fact, early on as a devotee, I would chant this verse because I remembered that this is a verse you have to chant right after getting up. Then somehow, down the years, I forgot about it. I lost that habit. And then after this, I want to revive the habit again. You see, it is said in the scriptures that you must think of Krishna and chant a few verses glorifying Him as soon as you wake up and also just before you go to bed. In your bed, you must offer some nice verses. There are many verses like this. So one of the verses that you chant as soon as you wake up in the morning, before you keep your feet on the ground. You see, because Mother Earth is worshipable, she is a mother. So you don't put your feet on your mother. So because now you are about to place your feet on Mother Earth, you beg her permission before you do that. So this is the verse to chant. In cultured families, still today you will find some people in Brahminical families may chant this verse. Samudra Vasane Devi Parvatastana Mandale Vishnu Patni Namastubhyam Padasparsham Kshamasvame. Samudra Vasane Devi, O Devi, O Mother Earth, the oceans are your clothes. Parvatastana Mandale, and the mountains and the forests are the body, they're there on the body of Mother Earth. Vishnu Patni Namastubhyam, I offer my respectful obeisances to you who are the wife of Lord Vishnu. Padasparsham Kshamasvame, please forgive me for touching you with my feet. This is Vedic culture. This is the degree with which we respected nature. So being eco-friendly is not simply a matter of some environmentalists being activists and doing something in the outside world. We are supposed to take care of nature, considering that to be Krishna's energy and Mother Earth is Krishna's wife. So she is our mother. So we see divinity in Mother Nature's gifts. Vedic hymns expressly instructed people not to harm the waters, the vegetation and the environment. For example, Prithivi ma hinsihi, antariksham ma hinsihi, ma apam oshadhir hinsihi. Prithvi is earth, antariksha is the sky, apo is the water, and the oshadhiya, the vegetation, the vegetables, the plants. So don't harm them. That was the injunction. Waters and herbs should have no poison, and waters are to be freed from defilement. And because of such a strong expression like this in the scriptures, in the Vedic times, everybody was very, very careful. Recently, when we went for a yatra from Vrindavan with some brahmacharis, we went to a place called Mansarovar, near Belvan. And then we went there, and there was that lake, and we were shocked because as soon as we came, we saw, literally speaking, thousands upon thousands of fish dead. It was a shocking sight. They were all over the water, floating on the water, and there were hundreds and thousands on the shores of the lake. And we were shell-shocked, what on earth has happened? And then we asked the pujari in the nearby temple, and he said, somebody just poisoned them. I said, what for? So there must have been some rivalry between people, or whatever must have happened, some local quarrels or something like that. And what did they do? They poisoned the waters. And we only saw the fish dying, but then many other forms of life must have died, and this water is probably used for many other purposes as well. So a person like this in the Vedic times would have been punished very, very severely. We see this happening all the time, nowadays especially. How much more we should be careful of not dirtying our environment, of keeping everything very, very clean and pure. You would never pass your stool or your urine into water. You would always, even when people went to the bank of the river, they would wash, but they would never bathe in these places. In fact, in the Mahabharata somewhere, there is a quotation that stool should be placed only in the soil, never in water. But nowadays, all forms of toilets, you place your stool only in the water. Whether it's the so-called Indian style of the toilet or it's the Western commode, you're basically placing the fecal matter in the water. So water is considered pure, and we should not defile the water. But these are concepts that are so alien to modern man that we would be considered rather strange to even speak such things. But now people are realizing, now that the global warming and all these other things are becoming issues, then everybody is waking up to what the scripture said anyway in the beginning. Even the Arthashastra of Chanakya Pandit was also called as Kautilya. Very strict punishment for those who violated the environment. Kautilya prescribes that everyone should be careful about preserving common property and biodiversity, otherwise he would be fined. No one should do anything to, this is a mistake, to harm cultivation, irrigation systems, etc. Houses and other dwelling places should be properly constructed, preserving the environment. There should be proper arrangements in every house for sewage and proper disposal of wastes. The violators would be fined in according to the gravity of the offense. So reason number 5 for why we should be eco-friendly. The human being is the elder brother of all living beings. He is endowed with intelligence more powerful than animals for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilization should depend on the production of Mother Nature without artificially attempting economic development to turn the world into a chaos of greed and power only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is also from Srila Prabhupada's purport. So what it means is that as human beings who are supposed to have the most developed intelligence, it behooves us to actually act responsibly also. That means we must preserve the planet we live on. We must preserve the gifts that this planet has given to us. The next point, cleanliness is next to godliness. Again, from Srila Prabhupada's purports. Shaucham, cleanliness, that is very essential. This morning I was talking with Tamal Krishna Goswami. Cleanliness is next to godliness. As soon as you give up cleanliness, you become Mlecha and Yavana. Mlecha, Yavana, these two names have come into Vedic Shastras, one who is unclean. And people come from all over the world to India, because India is a land of godliness, of spiritual culture. And what do they find? And this is the holiest of holy places, Govardhan. And the cows are going to eat all this plastic and they will die. And this is Mother Yamuna at Vrindavan. This is what we have done. So we speak so much about Vraj and Krishna Bhakti and how important Vrindavan is for us, and see what we do to Vrindavan. How is it any expression of our bhakti if we are going to pollute the holy river Yamuna, the holy Govardhan and the holy Vrindavan with such garbage? Groundwater is depleted and contaminated, leading to various diseases like cancer, skin ailments and waterborne diseases. Millions have been spent on the Ganga and Yamuna. Action plans have not given the desired result. All the major rivers, including the mighty Ganga, Yamuna, Rewa, Satluj and Kaveri, are polluted with sewage and industrial toxic waste. Our indifference bleeds callousness and arrogance. We then become immune and desensitized to the degradation we see around us. For example, air pollution, deforestation, etc. Here are some things that you see, some familiar sights that you may see here in India. See the one that's on the lower bottom corner. What do you think it is? The lower right hand bottom corner picture. Swimming? Yes. And in what?
Pond.
In Yamuna River. This is Yamuna River. So a picture speaks 1,000 words, isn't it? The next point, and by the way, before we come to move on from this topic, actually, sometimes when we go for yatras, what we do is, we keep aside half an hour at every place we go, and all the devotees who are visiting the yatra, they clean up the place. And we collect all the junk together and take it with us so that it can be disposed properly. When we had gone recently to Hampi, we went up all the way to, of course we did Pampa Sarovar, and we went all the way up to Hanuman's birthplace up on the hill. At Pampa Sarovar also, the devotees spread out for an hour in different groups. There was tons of junk, plastic, polythene, and various other things, dirtying what was otherwise a very serene and beautiful place and a holy place. Similarly, when we went on top of the mountain at Hanuman's birthplace, we found so much of these packets, polythene packets of gutkha and many, many other polythene bags and things. And even there are caves that are on top of the hill. We went into the caves and right inside we found tons of garbage. So our devotees picked up as much as we could. So this is also one part of serving the Dham. We serve the Dham by hearing the glories of the Dham. We serve the Dham by actually visiting the Dham. But isn't it important for us to do some physical service to the Dham? Actually, Jiva Goswami says this in his commentaries to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says that service to the Dham, Mathura Vas, which is one of the 64 items of sadhana bhakti, and one of the ways to serve the Dham, he says the topmost way is to actually clean the Dham. He mentions this. The next point about us being eco-friendly, why we should be, is for the sake of preaching. Today, environment is a burning issue and everyone is talking about it. This is something that matters to people and a wonderful opportunity for us to lead by example. If we don't take action and do something, we will be perceived as being irrelevant, perhaps even as contributors to the degradation of the fragile environment. So people think that we are just living in our own ivory towers, chanting Hare Krishna, and what are you doing for society? Haven't you heard this before? So here is something we can do for the society and still not compromise our principles. So from the point of view of preaching, it's very, very important. This time in America, we were told, in the Vyasa Puja, we heard the text of some interview that was taken of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj on the ecology. He was asked so many questions about what are you doing about the ecology and what do you think about the ecology. And then Maharaj had to answer so many questions. This is what people are talking about nowadays. This is the burning issue of the day. And as a responsible worldwide institution, we have to be seen to be active in these areas, doing something practical. ISKCON is a progressive movement. ISKCON is not a sentimental religious society, but a scientific movement dealing with all aspects of life, aiming to achieve perfection, Srila Prabhupada said. Ecology is a platform upon which everyone can preach. We are armed with the wise teachings of Srila Prabhupada about traditional Vedic dependence on nature. So we finished the first part, which was basically to convince devotees that being eco-friendly is not against the principles of being Krishna conscious. Rather, it is very much in tune with it. So then we made a proposal. I had sent this out on the internet to all the ISKCON forums. And the proposal I made was that in our efforts to be eco-friendly and to make green temples means eco-friendly temples, there must be 10 factors which need to be considered. The first one is materials. What kind of materials do you use for construction, for interiors, for kitchen and other equipment, for packing and storage and stationery, clothing and other personal effects and so on? Energy. What kind of energy do you use for lighting, heating, cooking, transportation and so on? Water. Water is such an important issue. I cannot explain to you how important it is. It could take up a whole lecture just to talk about water. And today here also you are facing a problem. Just today I heard that because there's some construction going on, your well water here is being affected. And the groundwater has practically disappeared overnight. Methods. We must learn how to cook, how to clean, how to transport and how to do various things to save energy. Waste management for solid and liquid waste. We must need how to manage these things nicely. The sixth point to be considered is food. We consider organic foods, cooking media, utensils, fuels, packed foods, preferred and avoidable types of food and so on. The seventh point is trees and greenery. Eighth point is health. Ninth is audit. We need to know what the current levels of consumption are and what are the ideal standards. And creating awareness, that is educating devotees about the need for being more eco-friendly. It is an uphill task convincing devotees to be eco-friendly. Because devotees think this is not a Krishna conscious thing to do, and it's, or rather they don't realize how Krishna conscious it is to be eco-friendly. Even in our Vrindavan temple there were so many attempts to do that, even to save water and so on. But it needs a lot of education, a lot of awareness generation for people to be sensitized to these things. So this was the proposal, that on the basis of these 10 factors, we wanted to make a blueprint for the do's and don'ts for different ISKCON temples and projects to be considered eco-friendly. And we proposed that this should be done in 5 levels. Level 1 will be the bare minimum standard that we expect every temple to follow. This should be very easy to implement. For example, not using plastic bags and cups and glasses, conserving water and so on. And level 5 will be the highest standard. This would qualify for a genuinely green temple status in an urban setting. So a temple that desires to be eco-friendly could start with level 1. And then gradually, with time, go on to higher levels and eventually hope to reach maybe level 5, if not at least level 4, perhaps level 3, as high as is practically possible. This is for urban situations. And for rural situations, there could be level 6 and 7 also, where higher standards could be feasible. In this presentation now, we're talking only of level 1. As it is, it's so difficult to persuade people to be eco-friendly. If you talk level 5, nobody will want to come again to even hear about environment. So we just talk about level 1. The very simple, the bare minimum things that we should be doing. So these are the practical and doable steps that we're going to talk about. The first is a basic approach. It's a question of attitude. And then the second is the actual physical steps that you could take. So when it comes to the basic approach or the attitudes, before you do anything, think if it is really necessary. If it is necessary, in what way can you do it in a manner that it will have the least impact on the earth and the environment? One time I was in Bangladesh, recently last year, and the devotees, we were going in by car, and they had packed breakfast. So we got into some very nice lush fields, some farmers' fields. We took his permission and sat in his field to have our breakfast. and out came the styrofoam plates and the styrofoam glasses and all the polythene bags, and then I refused to eat on that, and I took then some, we took out some leaves from the trees, washed them, and I put them, made a plate out of that and ate in that. And then I said, now, there were so many others. Then I said, what are we going to do with this? He said, no, these are disposable plates. I said, yes, disposable, but into what? Then you would just throw it in the field and go away. And these are not degradable. They will remain for 1,000 years. That's the lifetime of plastic. And there are certain things which are said to be in environmental language eternal. Eternal means they really last for a long time. So then finally, because now nothing could be done, so I spoke a little strongly and told them that never again should they come and just so casually dump, you know, so many styrofoam plates and plastic spoons and polythene bags on somebody's field like that and dirty it up. So then we dug a big hole in the field, in some corner which was not being irrigated. We put everything inside there, covered. What to do? It was not a satisfactory solution, but the least we could do. So we have to think, even in small things, if you're going out, do you need to carry plastic plates or these styrofoam plates? Why not use leaf plates? Question yourself if there is a better alternative for what you want to do. Example, serving food. If you are using disposable plates, then think of the resources needed to make the plate and the impacts of throwing away the plate after its use. What could be the alternatives? One could be biodegradable products such as leaves, stainless steel plates that can be washed and used again and again. If you decide to go for stainless steel, you have to think of the need for water and the cleaning medium that does not lead to wastewater that can pollute. So everything has to be very thoughtfully done. And there are some simple steps that we need to take into account, some attitudinal issues. Going green doesn't have to be a daunting task that means sweeping life changes. Simple things can make a difference. Nowadays, environmentalists talk of these three R's: reduce, reuse, and recycle. And when I reflected on this, I found this is exactly what the Vedic culture was. Reduce means reduce consumption. The modern day culture is increasing consumption. It's a consumerist culture. You've heard the term, consumerist culture. So today, instead of reducing consumption and reducing our artificial wants, we are measuring progress in terms of increasing the artificial necessities, so-called necessities of life. So the first principle is to reduce consumption. Consume only what you really need of everything. Second, reuse it as much as possible. I remember even as a child, my old clothes were never given away by my mother, were never just thrown away. They were always given to some poor kid somewhere. Even the textbooks, I remember. The textbooks were preserved. If there were three or four children in the house and sometimes in a larger family or with neighbors, the textbooks were kept and kept for the next child who would grow up in a year or two. Toys were preserved. Everything was preserved. Nowadays, it's a culture of waste. Use and throw. Use and throw, that's what it was called, not disposable, those plates in Bangladesh. Use and throw plates. Use and throw. So what do? We just pollute the environment. We become very, very extravagant in our lifestyle. And we lose sense of the principle of austerity and simplicity. We increase our consumption needlessly, so we must reuse things as much as possible, which can be done. Actually, I'll just make a small point. This is a big topic. Reuse, you can even use waste products again. It is my conviction that there is nothing called waste in nature. whatever you call waste is actually wealth. The only waste that is really waste is that which is industrial waste, like plastics and other things, effluents. That is damaging. But the wastes of nature, they are never waste. Even the stool and urine is not waste. Eventually, when people used to go for toilet into the jungles in the old days, the soil would get fertilized and nourished. Because then it is very, it's very rich in certain chemicals that are good for the soil. So it's very good manure. The leaves that fall from the trees, you can use them for mulching. They become very good nutrient for the soil, for the trees and so on. So nothing is wasted actually, if only we know how to use things. We must know how to utilize the products of nature. So reuse. And the third is recycle. Nowadays there is a vanishing breed of traders called the Bikriwalas. Sell your old newspapers to them, sell your glass bottles and tins to them, and then they would come around to your house and they would buy them and they would recycle them and they would make a meager living off that. So it's very important that we reduce, reuse and recycle. So before we move on to the practical things of what to do and not to do, these three principles would be very important. What is the time, by the way? 5:05. Okay, so it's going to take me at least another 10-15 minutes if I move fast. Should we do it for another day or should we skip through it very quickly now? Skip through it quickly. Any other services or other classes or anything? No. Okay. So when it comes to the actual steps, the first practical thing that any temple can do to become green is to appoint an environmental officer, or whatever you may call him. And it will be his service to actually see that the things that are useful for the temple to be green are actually so maintained. The first things we can do as far as materials are concerned is to ban polythene bags in all temples. At prasadam counters, at the book sales counters, in the restaurants. And we should encourage devotees carry a non-polythene, non-plastic shopping bag. Make non-plastic bags with a logo, say the temple's logo. Make cheap attractive bags from the waste cloth and subsidize these for each devotee or congregation member. So the bag you bring every time, you don't throw it away. Encourage devotees to earn their livelihood by making bags of paper and cloth and so on. Well, maybe in a big city like Bombay, you don't earn enough to survive in Bombay with a small business like this. But in the villages or smaller towns, surely there can be many people who can earn a decent livelihood by doing this, and temples can purchase it from them. Obtain free waste cloth from life members or donors who are garment and cloth manufacturers and make these bags. Transform waste into wealth. The next thing is don't use plastic cups and spoons and plates for serving prasadam. Minimize the use of plastic in other forms, for example bottles. Actually, I've used the word minimize because you can't totally eliminate. In our current lifestyle, everything is so much centered around plastic, even plastic money, and plastic consciousness is hard to really eliminate it altogether, but we can reduce it to the extent possible. Use eco-friendly materials as far as possible, bamboo, non-lead paints. Minimize paper use in offices. It is easier to save paper than to plant trees. This is an important principle. Use natural fabrics. Don't use chemical bleach for your clothes. Use environmentally friendly soaps, detergents, and shampoos. Insist on natural packing materials from your suppliers, like your fruit vendors, grocery stores, and carry your own crates and containers for bulk temple purchases. Conserve electricity. Do you turn off the lights when not required? Are the tube lights and bulbs in your temple clean? How many CFL tubes does your temple have? I'm not an authority on CFL. This is something somebody else compiled. There may be some issues people have with CFL, I don't know. There is something, but anyway, people say it is more eco-friendly, it consumes less power. Convert to CFL. Are the filters of air conditioners cleaned every month? Are the air conditioners in your temple set to 27 degrees Celsius, considered to be the most suitable temperature for the human body? Are refrigerators in your temple properly sealed? Are computer monitors in your temple turned off when not in use? Some practical steps, and overall you can save a lot of energy with this. Switch off lights, fans, etc. were not required. Put stickers as reminders on switchboards. One time when Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, he was in the guest house and he was walking by, and through the open window he saw that there was a fan still on and there was a lock on the door outside. And Prabhupada was so outraged. He said, "Who is that rascal?" He became very angry. He said, "Who is that rascal?" And everybody wondered why Prabhupada was angry. Then he pointed out and said, "Look, this person has gone out of the room, but he's left his fan on." So Prabhupada was so meticulous and observant when it came to small things like this. Change your light bulb. If 200 million households replace one regular light bulb with a new compact fluorescent bulb, the pollution reduction would be equivalent to removing 1 million cars from the road. Turn off the computers at night. By turning off the computer instead of leaving it in sleep mode, you can save 40 watt hours per day. Of course, here we don't have thermostat problems, so it's okay. Use more eco-friendly cooking fuels like bio-dung cakes. It's also incidentally tastier when you do that. Use methods to reduce fuel consumption like pressure cookers, steam cookers, etc. Transportation. Make vehicles more eco-friendly by improving mileage. Passenger capacity should be optimum, tire pressure should be optimum. So devotees who are performing managerial services, you can also do a lot to actually make the temple eco-friendly. Use more public transport and carpools. Consider solar options for alternative energy, biogas and so on. Water. Water does not grow in pipes. Save water. In Vrindavan, we put up these stickers on all the rooms of the guest house and everywhere so that people become aware of the need to do that. Don't leave the tap running when you brush your teeth. Use buckets of water rather than showers. Be aware of how much you use when you shower. So long as we have everything in plenty, we don't bother so much. When we feel the pinch, then we start taking notice. But it doesn't have to be like that. We should see in advance that this is going to be a major problem in future. Water is going to be one of the major crises in the world now. So water conservation is going to be very, very important. Stop overflow of water tanks. Plug leakages in water pipelines and taps. Install drop taps at all outlets. Set up drip or sprinkler irrigation systems. Put dual flushes for all water closets or alternative flush systems, which means one for when you pass urine and one's the bigger one when you actually pass stool. Recycling and rainwater harvesting, this will be level 2. But for new temples, this should be something mandatory actually. In many cities, the municipal authorities don't give you permission unless you have some rain harvesting system, like in Bangalore, for example. Solid and liquid waste management. In the Bhaktivedanta manner, everything is so nicely done. In London, they have for degradable and biodegradable waste, they have for plastic and non-plastic. Everything is so neatly organized. Very nicely done there. So we should also segregate waste, segregate plastic coverings such as wrappers or bags for dal, rice, etc. Store it in one area and then give it to the bikri wala, who pays you to remove your trash for you in this case. always have two sets of bins, one marked organic waste, the other non-degradable. Put up a poster where bins are to educate the devotees. Maha waste as well, like flowers, wicks, etc., can all go into a compost pit to make natural fertilizer for trees and plants in the campus. Many times, people keep away the Mahagala and the Nirmalya of the deities, and it goes into the rubbish and the municipality takes it away, and certainly it is not a respectful disposal, because they will not deal with it respectfully. So why not instead, if you don't have a river or a sea close by, why not just compost it? Of course, here we have the sea, so I suppose, I remember we used, one devotee used to go every morning, though. Are they still being done now? Someone goes to the sea with the flowers?
Unfortunately, they don't allow to.
See, yeah, and those they used to allow, but in one sense it's good they don't allow, because everybody would come and throw. But one thing that could be done is to compost it. That's another. Reduce and reuse, keep warranty documents. Proper disposal of waste when trash is burned. This is a very popular malpractice, actually. You just burn everything. But you simply transfer the pollution from the soil or the water to the air. That's all. The pollution remains. Garbage is of two kinds. Biodegradable and non-degradable. So kitchen waste, maha waste, garden waste can all be composted. And paper, which is a biodegradable waste, along with the other non-degradable wastes like metal, glass, rubber, plastics, can be recycled. So it really needs the devotee to apply his mind to all this and get it put together for any temple. And it would obviously need the cooperation of all the devotees in the temple, otherwise it wouldn't be possible. Food. Did you know that if you consumed an average apple, you would be eating over 30 pesticides even after you have washed it? Organic food is known to contain 50% more nutrients, minerals and vitamins than produce that has been intensively farmed. So anyway, we know so much about the chemical pesticides, and now with our Govardhan farm coming up, there'll be more and more organic food available, I'm sure. Try to identify farmers in the countryside around your city who do organic farming and then purchase from them. So you'll encourage them to do organic farming and the devotees will also eat pure organic food. Try to link up to the nearest organic farmers networks. You'll find them in many books. Have your own small organic vegetable garden on the premises, rooftop, courtyard or any open land for the deities. Actually, this is becoming very popular now. In Bombay and other places, there are people who teach you how to grow vegetables, flowers, on the rooftop. It's called rooftop gardening. And you use your household waste to as manure, as compost. And you get delicious vegetables, enough for a family, actually. So for a temple also, if you find whatever little space is available, but in our campus here is hard because we are really tight up for space. But any temple that has even a little space can do a little something. Encourage the use of plants indigenous to the local or geographical region. Improve the air quality by planting more trees on the campus. At least 11% of the area should be green. For indoor areas, use oxygen generating indoor plants. So there's some organizations that do all this, rooftop gardens. They teach people how to grow vegetables and flowers on their rooftops. So here's an example. For health, yes, there's many things. It may take me too much time to discuss this. I'll just skip through all these things. Yes, temple audit is very important. Map your water. How much water does your temple use? I did it once. I did the exercise at Vrindavan and I was so shocked that it took me a few days to recover. I didn't realize that we need use so much of water. We use lakhs of liters of water per day. And the way we were pumping out the water from the ground and the water levels in the ground were plummeting, I was in anxiety about how on earth we are going to live in the future. What is going to be the situation in the future, 10 years, 20 years from now? When Prabhupada was here in Krishna Balaram Mandir, the groundwater level, according to one person who used to work then also, was 20 feet below the ground. And now it is more than 150 feet. So it's going down and down and down. Fortunately, because of the recent floods, the water levels have come up again a little bit. So how eco-friendly are the vehicles in your temple? What is the percentage of green area in your temple? Of course, please remember that this presentation I had made for temple presidents, so I didn't get time to change it for all of you. So I leave you to just read this quickly in order to save time. This is for audit, so we should know exactly how much we consume. Promote environmental awareness. Provide all the materials to the temple environmental officer. Give him stickers and posters. Talk about it as one of the topics at any Ishtagoshti. Encourage the congregational devotees to also follow this principle. And educate the employed staff also to understand these things. In Vrindavan, for example, we had to physically demonstrate to the devotees, the staff who were cleaning, about how they should clean. They had to be taken there and shown with the hand, look, this is the amount of water you must use. This is the way you must sweep. This is the way you must, this is the volume of water that you should release, and so on. Also consider sending devotees for training in various fields of environment protection and conservation. Many courses are available. Of course, now we have many devotees, I believe, who are doing a lot of study and work in this area. That's very good. Use the right methods for each of the earlier 9 categories. Right methods means those methods that save time, energy, money, materials, etc. and are eco-friendly. For example, water your garden in the evenings rather than in the mornings. Do you know why? Yeah, so water loss by evaporation is minimized. Use buckets rather than hose pipes for cleaning. Eventually, we need more self-sufficient rural communities. These could also support the needs of urban temples with safe and pure organic food and milk with the aim to offer Krishna the best we can. This will ensure the protection of Mother Earth, cow, and the devotees. There are many other religious organizations that are doing a lot on this. ISKCON is probably one of the few well-known institutions who are practically doing nothing about it. So, in conferences, we have nothing to say when people ask, what are you doing? And we really aren't doing much. So this is one school that I visited. They've done a lot. It's an eco-friendly school, the Krishna Avanti School in London. They've done a great job. Here's some cartoon, somebody put it in there. Burying my head in the sand over climate change is much easier now that half the world's turned to desert. Here's a very likely possibility for the future. From the day of the Stone Age and the Golden Age and the Space Age, it is a day of garbage. Yes. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Sorry for having overstepped the time, but please do take this seriously. I think because it's late, we won't have question answers. So I had a brief discussion with Gauranga Prabhu this morning, and we are also trying to get some devotees to help out in the national effort. Yeah, Gauranga Prabhu? Sorry?
Yeah, I told you about the well already seeing the...
Yes, yes, yes. The water level in the well has gone down, right? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Gaur Premanande.